So today we're interviewing businessman Sean Mooney, who's running for governor as a Republican candidate. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate what you're doing for the employee community in the state of Maine. You know, workforce development is on the top of every employer's mind, and you've been leading that charge for several years. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. So here's thy first question. What in Lord's name possessed you to decide to run for governor?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I really feel I'm going to go back to the beginning of the country. You know, our founding fathers had a vision on who they wanted to lead America and to build America. And you take that cast of characters, if you will. You know, they were farmers, they were blacksmiths, they were business people. And they'd gone out and built a reputation in their local communities. And then they went and served the country. And then they went back to work. And I feel like we've gotten away from that model. You know, people go to school for political science, they get active in politics, they get elected. And then they just make a career out of politics. And I think that's why the country is in the shape it's in. I think you see that trend changing, you know, with Governor LePage. Look at President Trump. I think people are seeing the results and the benefits of getting a business person into key influential positions, like governor, for example, to lead the state. And I hope to continue Governor LePage's fiscal policies, fiscal conservatism, and help build on his fiscal foundation.
You know, I think it's fair to say that Maine's economy has certainly improved over the last 4 years. Job growth has been strong, and employment's at 2.7%. Tax revenue's strong, especially on the business side. And Mainers, their consumer confidence is nearing a high. Should we change course in what we're doing, and why?
Well, here we are. I'm kind of vetting out a problem out of a painted really a realistic and a great picture of growth for the state of Maine. But, Dave, it still comes back to a spending problem. You know, when you look at Augusta right now, we're looking at $160 million in additional K-12 spending that has no outcomes attached to it. You know, how are we going to improve education? No measurable matrices that any business person would have in place. We're looking at a Medicaid expansion referendum that could cost as much as $80 to $100 million a year. So it's the same old scenario where, okay, now we're on an economic run. We could put some money away like the governor's worked so hard to do to build on that rainy day fund. And they're just looking to spend it faster than we could bring it in. So that's the problem with politicians is they look at economic growth as an opportunity to expand government, expand programs, and overreach. And that's what I'm going to continue, like Governor LePage, we're going to be fiscal hawks, tighten up, actually reduce our budgets. And that extra revenue then could be put into the rainy day fund and used to help rebuild our infrastructure. You know, some of the things that we've let go in the search of just starting all these social programs and dumping more money into education with no measurable results to prove that they need that money.
You know, companies must compete today, and whether real or perceived, the shortage of tech-savvy people have affected the way companies do business. I'm sure you've seen that at Moody's. This is a hiring challenge for the state. Some say the reason is a skills gap. Others say, hey, we've got a situation, we've got older workers, which, of course, is a very large workforce in Maine. Do you agree there's a skills gap, and what do you plan to do over the next 4 years if elected to deal with that?
There's no question about it, and I'll tell you why, and your listeners out there, why I am absolutely the right guy at the right time. The most employable skills that people can have, and you can back me up on this, Dave, are hybrid. Okay, it used to be you go to a four-year school, you know, get a degree, a professional degree, or you kind of go into service business, trades, whatever. The most employable skills that we have today is a hybrid. You have to have, you're able to bundle the skills of having technical aspect of education and experience as well as the professional side. So you need both. You need critical thinking, strategic thinking, problem solving, but you also need the hands-on technical experience to know how to program, know how to run computerized equipment and machinery. When you bundle those skills together, and again, I got my blue-collar background where I'm a tradesperson as well as my executive experience in actually running and growing a main business and organizational skills. So that's exactly what we need in the 21st century workforce. Technical skills, hands-on, experiential learning, coupled with the professional skills that you would get in a 2 or 4 year degree. That's what employers are looking for.
You're correct in terms of it's certainly both sides of that coin are areas that we need to focus on. If you look at that today in the workforce, how do we solve that problem over the next 4 years about getting the workforce ready so quickly because the needs are in such high demand today?
Here's what we do. The first thing that we do, Dave, is make it a requirement for every vocational and career tech ed, and I'm talking at the high school level, and we can migrate into the community college, every tech instructor, vocational instructor in the state of Maine, would have to work 2 weeks a year, one in the spring, one in the fall, at a best-in-class business in their respective field. So, for example, okay, someone that's teaching auto body or collision repair, if you will, would have to work at Moody's for a week. That gives us the ability to give that instructor a non-binding assessment. You know, can they write an estimate? Can they run the latest frame machine, the laser-guided frame machine equipment that we have? Do they understand the paint products and processes? So that way there, that tech instructor not only has his academic abilities in the classroom, but he becomes real-world, best-in-class, work-ready skills that he can take and put back into the classroom. And here's the other thing it does. It opens up job shadowing, internships, and job placement opportunities with local businesses, which is exactly what employers need. So that would be an instant, you know, right now, what we could do to make our VOC and career tech ed programs the best in the country.
Today, we're talking with Sean Moody, who's a businessman running for governor as a Republican candidate. I'm your host, David Chulo, and welcome to the HR Power Hour. How do we solve the real issue of graduates leaving the state due to the reality of perception of either a lack of great jobs or good jobs or a lack of good high-paying jobs?
Okay, here's my answer for that. And I've been to so many forums. There'll be 200 or 300 people at these forums, Dave, and you and I are about the same age group. And I say to them, how many people in this room started working at 15 or younger? And virtually all, you know, the vast majority of hands go up because they're, you know, demographic. What I would do is, as your next governor, we would put our teenagers back to work, enable them to go out into our local communities, get a job just like we did. That not only teaches them school responsibility, how to handle money, to deal with adults other than the parents or the school, and help build a little self-esteem and self-confidence before they go out into the real work world, you know, full-time work world, if you will. That's what's lacking in our society today. Our teenagers, the ones that aren't college bound especially, they're sitting on the couch, you know, they're involved with iPads and the internet, and they're not engaged in our local communities and our local economy. Employers need help, and they're willing to hire these teenagers. You know, we've got to provide a tax credit for the employers to make it worthwhile for them to bring them on. They're not experienced labor, they're not skilled. But they're willing and they're excited about bringing young people into their organizations to teach them some life skills and work-ready skills that they need desperately. They're not getting in the classroom and they're not getting at home. That's what keeps them here. But to your question, because they establish relationships in the local community, that's what keeps them, because they become vested and passionate about our state and wanting to give back into the community that they live, instead of just being expected to go to a four-year college and you're out of here. We got to change the narrative, change the message, and change those expectations.
You mentioned infrastructure, and of course, infrastructure not only includes roads, bridges, rail, and other structures like that, but it also includes broadband.
Yes.
As you look at the state, there is certainly a challenge of geography. There's certainly a challenge of rural Maine versus, you know, if we want to call it Portland or southern Maine. How do you look at that over the next 4 years and your plans to deal with this real challenging issue? Because it is a hindrance to job creation.
No question. And where Maine is a very rural state, you know, the math just doesn't add up. When you're running fiber, which all of our 11 locations are hooked to fiber, so we understand, you know, the value of bandwidth and technology and running our operations. But stretch out into our rural areas of our state, which need broadband desperately, the math just isn't work. You can't run 40 miles of cable to hook up four service customers. No, it just doesn't work. That's why we don't have it. The good news for Maine people is, in the rural areas of our country, I was at Brunswick Landing with Steve Levesque just recently, and they have a company over there that's building rockets, these miniature rockets, to deploy miniature satellite up into the atmosphere that will actually create a broadband network across the country. This technology is here. It's going to be employable or deployable, and we're going to see it in the next 2 to 5 years. So that will open up vast amounts of economic opportunities in our rural communities, which we desperately need. So I'm really excited about that.
Today we're talking with businessman Sean Moody, who is running for governor as a Republican candidate. I'm your host, David Chulo. One of the other questions that have certainly come up, or issues, I should say, is the voters of the state of Maine voted to continue to increase the minimum wage every year for the next few years. It's currently $10 an hour. It's going up to $12. Some say that's certainly not enough. It should go $15, $20 an hour. What's your position on the minimum wage versus the living wage, and how do you see your administration dealing with this issue statewide if elected?
Well, I'm sensitive to this, and I think as a lot of employers are. The thing that we don't like, which this is the real rub, is we don't like government telling us how to run our business. And we can go right back to the financial collapse back in 08. When government got involved, you know, they picked winners and losers. They broke the franchise agreements with the car companies. They bailed them out. The little dealers went out of business. You know, that's what happens when government breaks the natural capitalistic cycle that we've always had in America. You know, we're going to have people that are going to fail. Businesses are going to fail. But somebody's going to capitalize on that failure. So when you start picking and losing who's going to, you know, win and who we're going to prop up, business people resent it because it's like we have to find ways to compete and we have to be competitive, and that benefits the consumer. So when the government says you're going to pay people X amount, it drives up the cost, it drives up the price, which affects all of us, every consumer, and people resent it because it's like, government, you can't run your own business. Don't try to tell us how to run ours. So I do not put the escalation clause in the minimum wage language or law. I think it's going to really hurt the rural areas of our state. And we don't pay minimum wage. I mean, most employers don't. We're only talking about a very small population of employers that have to pay minimum wage. And these are usually, like the people I'm talking about, the teenagers, the first job folks out there that are getting skills. It's a job, you know, and they're going to take those skills and take them elsewhere and move up the economic ladder and wage ladder. The other thing, David's important, is as you described, unemployment's an all-time low here. And just naturally, wages are rising now. So it would have happened on its own. They should have left it alone, take out the escalation clause. And I think that that is a real rub with Maine employers. We're 48th and business friendly. And that's exactly the reason why, is because government is trying to tell us how to run our business, and we don't like it.
Do you support a training wage or a lower wage for those 14, 15, 16-year-olds that are just working through the system?
Absolutely. And again, people can say this, oh, geez, Moody, you know, as a business guy, you know, wants to pay lower wages. It's not that at all. Think about this. I want the listeners to really think about this. These folks go on to a two-year or four-year school. They pay to go to school to get an education. So when they go to an employer, first-time job, the employer trains them, okay, educates them on how to perform or how to integrate themselves into the work environment. There's a cost associated with that for the employer. So if there's not a benefit to the employer in terms of, like you said, I would absolutely promote a tax credit to help these employers to incentivize them, the teenagers, to come back into our workplace. The value of that is immeasurable. And I tell young people, Dave, and I'm sure you adopt this, when you're young, don't pay attention to what you earn. Pay attention to what you learn. But don't go down the road for 50 cents more an hour. If you're in a healthy environment that's challenging you and you're learning, that knowledge will be with you for a lifetime. No one can take that away from you. So be a sponge, learn all you can, and then go out there and chase your dreams.
The city of Portland is talking about paid sick time. What's your position on this?
Well, I think it goes right back to, you know, the basic premise of philosophy of government should not be running our businesses for us. I mean, that's private enterprise, and that's capitalism. It's freedom. If you don't provide good benefits, good pay, and a good work environment, not going to be able to hire anybody, nor are you going to be able to keep anybody on board. Nobody knows this better than you do, Dave. So creating that high-performance work environment takes all of the above. You've got to treat people right. You've got to pay them good. You've got to give them good benefits and a good environment to work in, the tools that they need to be successful. And that's what every employer faces right now. So to say you've got to, you know, give paid sick time off, you know, longer maternity leave, higher minimum wage, these are all tension points for businesses here in the state of Maine. They resent the fact that government is overstepping and overreaching their responsibilities and trying to tell us how to run our businesses, which they should be helping us run our business, not, you know, standing in the way of us running our business.
Today we're talking with businessman Sean Moody, who is running for governor as a Republican candidate. I'm your host, David Chulo. Employers are concerned with the impending recreational legalization of marijuana, especially with this opioid epidemic that is certainly going on. It's a violation of federal law, but employers are certainly concerned because there are going to be different classes of people. For example, federal workers or federal employers or federal contractors will have to deal with one thing CDL drivers will have to deal with one thing, and then regular employees will have to deal with another. What's your position on this topic, and what does your administration look to do about this issue?
Well, the first thing I want to say, the common denominator to some of these things you're bringing up goes right back to the citizens' referendum. We've got to reform the citizens' referendum, which has really constructed a fourth branch of government, and they've kind of hijacked the legislature. You know, we have a legislature for a reason. You can agree or disagree whether they do their job effectively, but that legislature is in place to have public opinion, you know, public support on bills, so that people have the ability to weigh in on, and the recreational marijuana bill is a perfect example of that. And to answer your question, as an employer, no, I do not support it. And I said this to several people. I said, look, would you advocate to take away the ability to do a blood test on alcohol? And they're like, well, no, of course not. You know, we wouldn't be able to tell someone, prove if someone was drinking and driving, you know, drunk driving. I said, exactly. And right now, there's no clinically proven way to test for marijuana for impairment. And until they come up with that, I can't support it. Because you know as well as I do, people can drive impaired. They can cause, you know, an accident or death. And literally, with a good lawyer, walk away from it. And that, to me, is reckless and it's irresponsible. Now, do I personally care if someone's smoke a pot at their house on the weekend? No. I mean, that should be up to that individual. But you're right. It flies in the face of federal law. There's a direct conflict there. They passed it. The legislature is going to have to figure out how they're going to implement it. But me personally, I'm not in favor of the law until they come up with a way, the clinically proven way, to test for impairment.
Another issue that employers say is a huge concern, of course, we all know, is the health care issue. Costs are going up. One of the examples I use that if I moved my company to New Hampshire, I looked at the healthcare costs for the same plan, same company, it'd be 30% less. How do we deal with that issue? And how do you and your new administration, if you're elected governor, plan to address this critical issue for employees as well as employers?
Well, the first thing I want to say, Dave, is I want to compliment you on your line of questioning. It's fantastic. These are the real issues facing the people of Maine, facing the employers of Maine, facing our economy. Healthcare costs are at an unsustainable pace. They're going up 20-30% a year, which is really like a mortgage payment for most people. It's unsustainable. It's taken our middle class and our small business employers. It's devastating. So there's only three healthcare insurance providers in the state. We don't have the competition. And to answer your question, we absolutely have to be able to buy insurance across state lines. There's 100 auto insurance companies in the state of Maine, okay? And we're in the business, so believe me, we deal with them every day. Auto insurance in the state of Maine is the cheapest of any state in the country right now. That's when the system's working. You've got choice, you've got competition, the consumer benefits from that. So we would absolutely, number one priority would be to lower the healthcare cost and to lower the healthcare insurance premiums here in the state of Maine, but being able to buy across state lines, it's absolutely got to happen.
Do you also support the association grouping? In other words, associations being able to band together?
Dave, as you know, 90%, I think people should take note of this, roughly 43,000 businesses in the state of Maine, of which 90% of them are like 15 people or less. I mean, Maine is a small business state, believe me.
There is no question.
So what a small business could do is belong to a national organization. Let's say a florist, for example. A florist has five people working. Small floral shop, great business, local community business. They don't sign on to the National Florist Association, whatever. Now they're in a population of 5,000 members. With the economies of scale with 5,000 members, they could buy insurance for a third of the cost. And that's exactly what we've got to put in place, Dave. We have to be able to buy. These small companies have got to have the economies of scale of larger businesses or corporations have the same buying power, purchasing power that the big companies do in order to compete.
Let's discuss the issue of Maine state taxes. I don't really know anybody that says, yep, I think I want to pay some more taxes. At least I'm not aware of any owner, business leader, or a resident that says, my gosh, I would love to send more money up to Augusta or to the feds.
Oh, man.
So tell me what your plan is specifically, twofold. If you could.
Right. It's twofold. It's number one, you're right. I think we're like the third highest tax state in the country. So not only is it the cost of taxes, But it's also, I think, just as equally much a frustration is where does the money go that we send up there? I mean, would you agree? I mean, it's a two-pronged frustration. And our property taxes have continued to go up and to climb, and it's just unsustainable. So we would lead by example at the state level. We combine the Maine Turnpike Authority, roll it into the DOT. We do not need two entities with all the redundant buildings, administration. I'm not talking about selling the plow trucks, okay? We've got to maintain that road to the level that it's maintained today. But there's so many redundancies. We could roll the main building, it's a $14 million building of the Turnpike Authority, roll it back over into the private property tax rolls. We don't need all this redundancy in state government. And we would lead by example to lower our cost and roll these quasi-agencies together. And that would create a role model, but also we'd incentivize day for local communities to do the same thing. You know, why do we have a school facilities department and we've got public works? You know, why do we have a finance director? And all that administrative overhead is duplicated in every single local community across the state. It's time we get with the 21st century. We don't duplicate services here in our private enterprise. We can't afford to. And neither can the taxpayers continue to afford to send all this money to Augusta and have all this duplicate of services and redundancy that just costs us a fortune and doesn't make us competitive.
Today we're talking with businessman Sean Moody, who is running for governor as a Republican candidate. I'm your host, David Shugloff. You know, it's interesting as employers are dealing with trying to get employees to come to Maine, right? And certainly my organization does a lot of trying to attract talent to Maine. It's a big issue in terms of the cost structure, especially in the Portland market. It's as expensive as Boston in many aspects, but certainly the income levels are not as high. Do you see a way to try to understand from a gubernatorial standpoint what you can do to help deal with the costs of living in the state of Maine?
Well, I think we're on a demographic. Some people say it's a demographic or the perfect storm. We got a shrinking population and an aging demographic. I see it as the perfect opportunity for young people. You know, if you want upward mobility, there's never been a time in the state's history it's been stronger than right now. Because, you know, again, you and I are on the same age group, Dave. 5 to 10 years, we're going to retire out. Well, somebody's got to run this place. So young people, we got to change that message to guidance counselors, parents, and teachers. Stop telling our kids there's no opportunity here. There's tons of it. And the other thing that I would advocate is a focused strategy to reach out and target a 25 to 45-year-old former Mainers that have left the state and incentivize them to come back and revitalize our workplace and our communities. These are healthy people with talent. They're getting ready to raise their families if they haven't already started. And they're looking at the world differently now with raising a family. They're looking at, you know, going to school, going through metal detectors, you know, these neighborhoods that aren't safe. Maine is a safe state. They know what it is. They were raised here, and they know the only place to raise their family is Maine. So we just got to reach out and show them what the opportunities are here in the state of Maine, the job opportunities, and they'll come back. They just, no one's reaching out to them. We could offer tuition reimbursement. You know, employers would help foot the bill for some of that. Student loan forgiveness. Provide them incentives. That's all they need to come back and revitalize and reconnect them with their families.
As we wrap up the show in our last 2 minutes here, why should employers and employees in the state of Maine vote for Sean Moody?
Well, I think for all the reasons that I just described. I don't look at problems as, you know, talking points or political gamemanship. I've been solving problems for 40 years. When you look at how we run our organization, Dave, and you know it well, you know, 34% of our company is owned by our coworkers. We give 10% of our after-tax profit sharing back to our coworkers that earned it. You know, we've created a culture, a high-performance culture here at Moody's, and we could do the same thing in the state of Maine. I've said this at debates and things. I say, you know, Moody's has been recognized to be one of the best places to work in Maine. As your next governor, I'll make Maine the best place to work in America.
Sean, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I appreciate you taking your time from your busy schedule. And, hey, if you become the gubernatorial nominee, love to have you back on for an hour topic as we get ready for the big general election.
Absolutely, Dave. It'd be my pleasure. And I think I would just end with this for the voters out there. You know, I'm not a politician. And if you look at Governor LePage, he's an outsider. He's a businessman. President Trump's an outsider, businessman. I'm the outsider, and I'm the businessman. If you're looking for a politician, I'm not your candidate. I've got 40 years of executive experience This is an executive job, and I feel like I'm ready with the vision and experience to help lead Maine forward.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. You take care.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to today's HR Power Hour special program. It was my honor to speak with Attorney General Mills, as well as businessman Sean Moody. I hope you learned a lot from it. Get out there and vote in the primary on June 12th and make your voice heard. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB, 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk, WLOB, 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.